Hi, Santanu. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you, Chris?
All right, good. Where are you phoning from?
From my house today, in London.
Okay. Which bit of London are you from?
At the moment, Harrow.
Right. I'm down in South London at the moment, based at the Elephant and Castle, which is where I work. Okay, I was going to interview you about your chapter that you've written for the Social Media in Higher Education book. But before I get into that, can I just ask you about yourself, really? What job do you actually do at the moment? What's your job title? And
So I'm the Senior Learning Technology Advisor at the Centre for Excellence in Learning and Teaching at the University of East London.
wow, that's a big job title. What? Can you just very, very briefly just explain what you do in your job?
I am the effectively the head of TEL or e-learning or equivalent, and I look after the VLE and various other associated technologies like Panopto, Mahara, and Turnitin, amongst others. And I'm managing a small team of learning technologists.
Okay, great. Okay, moving on in terms of the sort of the thrust about this interview. Can you first just tell me how did you start using social media? When did you first get into it, and why did you get into it as well?
I've been using social media for about before probably most people have been using it in the early 2000s. I did a degree in multimedia technology and design at Brunel, so we actually learned about the kind of theory and the coding aspects of some of these systems in the early 2000s. So I started dabbling with everything from ICQ to MSN Messenger to Facebook when it first came out. And then when I became a learning technologist in 2004, I started to use various pieces of technology, specifically Twitter in about 2008, 9, just after it sort of came out, a couple of years after it came out,
Well,
for the Learning and Teaching Symposium. So it's been a habit since.
you're definitely an early adopter. Turning now towards the chapter you've written in the book. It's the chapters on how academics understanding about learning spaces. I mean, can I just ask you first of all, what do you actually mean by learning spaces?
A learning space can be either physical or virtual, and it's a place where people come together to explore, collaborate, and discuss ideas and learning. So anywhere from a lecture theatre to a coffee shop, where or even open field, it just needs to have activities and facilitation, and obviously be at a good temperature, so not too hot or cold. Have light, and have the ability for yourself to kind of move yourself or furniture if it's indoors. So that's a kind of a brief description of the learning space.
Are you just referring to the sort of physical learning spaces, or do you mean the virtual as well?
The virtual as well. So a virtual could be a webinar. It could be a discussion topic in a VLE module. It could be a Facebook group. It could be any of these social media platforms where people either synchronously or asynchronously meet up and converse.
Okay, and obviously, I mean, from what you just said, you don't just mean formal learning spaces as well. They could just as easily be informal as well. So you mentioned coffee shop, but it could be just people. So often you see just students hanging around, corridors, just chatting, and quite often about their work and their assignments and what they're getting on with and things like that. Okay, so I mean, just another question that's just popped into my head. I don't know if it's true for you, but do you feel like there's a bit more of a discussion about learning spaces now than there was, say, maybe even 2 or 3 years ago? Is it a relatively recent discussions that have been had, or is that just me? Have I just tuned into it a bit more
I
recently?
think it's more mainstream than it was. It was kind of in, if you like, an R&D kind of phase. But I think through the robustness of technology, for example, we're using Skype for Business today to conduct this interview. We couldn't have maybe done that 3 or 4 years ago because of bandwidth connections, 4G, etc. So it's more of a thing now because of the ubiquitous nature of technology. So yeah, I
Okay.
think it's more a thing now.
Okay. All right. In terms of your chapter, I mean, there are two things you definitely mentioned throughout it, and that's one is a Twitter chat, and the second one is a talk. I'm not sure if everybody's totally familiar with these phrases. Could you just give us just a brief overview of what a Twitter chatter is, if I could say it, what a Twitter chat is, and what a talk is?
So yes, quite a mouthful. So basically, a Twitter chat is a live Twitter event where people can join in across the world by searching for a hashtag. For example, LTHE chat as a hashtag,
Okay.
and they can participate in any at a point in time. So whether that's in the afternoon or in the evening, for a given period of time, an hour usually.
Okay, how often do they usually last for?
About an hour. There's
Okay.
usually 5 to 6 questions, and people reply with A1, A2, answer one, answer two, and the hashtag in the tweet. And also reply to each other's postings on Twitter.
Okay. And then secondly, I mean, I think a few people probably heard of Twitter chats, but less so probably with a talk. Can you tell me what a brief summary of what a talk is?
So a talk is a Twitter walk, so it's exactly the same as a tweet chat, but it happens whilst people are walking. So they are walking and they are tweeting at in real time. So that's kind of a definition of a Twitter walk or a talk.
Okay, sounds like fun. All right. I know, because I've participated in definitely some Twitter chats, and I've participated in the Learning and Teaching in Higher Education Twitter chat, which I would definitely recommend. I think that runs on a Wednesday evening. Is it
Yeah.
8 o'clock, isn't it? Eight
Yeah,
o'clock.
8 o'clock, 8 till 9, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that just seems to cover all sorts of topics, all related to education and higher education and stuff like that. And I mean, personally, I found it really interesting and informative. But can I ask you, how did you get involved with that? And as well, maybe if you could explain how it works again as well. And is it? I mean, I found it useful, but I mean, can you get meaningful discussions going on Twitter? I mean, it's quite a short space, isn't it? Quite a few. You've only got, was it only 280 characters, Can anything meaningful be discussed in that space?
I think it can, especially as the character length is now increased, but also it gets the person who is replying to be as brief as possible. And whilst in academia we try to be as verbose as possible in writing, we also want brevity when we're trying to encourage students to be more employable. They should be able to get their point across to an employer succinctly. So I think that's a skill that this kind of participation allows for. So condensing down a topic like learning spaces or BAME and the attainment gap or inclusive learning or any of these topics, learning design. curriculum design aspects down to its bare bones in that tweet. So you can, I think, have meaningful interactions. And if you look at the actual number of tweets that there are in the LTHU chat, Twitter chat, it's usually 600 tweets plus in an hour, and that's
Wow.
more interaction than you would have if you were to take all those people. That's about 700 odd people into a room and ask them to talk for 60 minutes.
True. I kind of agree with that. But is there anything that Twitter can bring to say if that's different, or can actually bring something extra to a face-to-face discussion? I mean, there are probably some limitations with it, but is there are things that a Twitter chat could do better than, say, a face-to-face discussion?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious, linking to actual resources and also taking images or those kind of things. I've also in my tweet chat just before December used Padlet as well as a kind of way of extending the kind of Twitter chat to Padlet as well, so allowing people to kind of post up drawings and other links before, during, and after the kind of tweet chat to kind of get more of a discussion going. So
All right. How did
yeah,
that work? Sorry, I'm not.
so I created a Padlet board and
Yeah.
then sent the link out just before the Twitter chat, so people could kind of use that as a back channel to the Twitter chat,
All right.
which in itself is a back channel, face to
Yeah,
face. So this is the back channel's back channel,
yeah.
and allowed the use of posting up
Interesting.
drawings of learning spaces, and that got quite a lot of people thinking about that, which you couldn't have done in a classroom situation easily. And then and for the sheer volume of people interacting with each other, you can't also do that
Yeah.
easily in the physical space. So and people come back to the Twitter chat and have a look, read it again, through
Yeah.
Storify or
Right.
etc. So there's a lot of opportunities before, during, and after for learning.
I suppose then you've got a digital record of it all as well, haven't
Yes,
you,
yeah,
as well? So
exactly.
it just doesn't be left on some sort of, I don't know, a bit of paper
Yeah.
at the end of the room or something. Okay, good. All right. Well, the second, I mean, that was the learning technology in HE Twitter chat. Have you actually done a talk yourself from a university?
I have myself and Don Pates at City, where I previously worked. We did one back in May.
How did that go?
It went well. I think there was a lot to do because there's the aspect of a tweet chat, and then we were walking. So there's quite a lot of it's quite a lot to think about. So it's best to assign roles in the group that you're with and to sort of take breaks and then tweet.
Okay.
But the act of actually walking and reflecting that way was very useful. So yeah, I think yeah, it was a very interesting and it's a different experience.
I think there's just something useful just having a walk and a talk, isn't there, really? It's
Yeah,
quite useful
yeah.
just on itself. I suppose tweeting out is just another ex extension of that, really. Okay, last couple of questions then. Do you actually think, well, maybe you're going to say yes to this, but maybe you can explain it a little bit more. Do you actually think that things like the Twitter chat and the talk actually have an impact on what lecturers or academics do with their students? I mean, it's nice to talk about these things, but does it actually have an impact?
I mean, impact is quite a difficult thing to quantify and to actually measure anyway, in terms of academic development. But I think that the act of at least reading from their fellow peers, because these kind of Twitter chats aren't just academic developers or learning technologists like you and I, but it's actually also people who lecture, everyone from a a postdoc right through to professors take part in these Twitter chats every week. So people seeing examples of what other people are doing at their level or higher, that kind of social proof aspect, I think, does eventually have some impact, but that would need to be really researched and measured in some way through a framework or through more research for me to say it definitely does, because there's obviously a lot of things that influence an academic's learning and teaching. I mean, it could be as simple as having teenage kids and finding that they're using a particular tool, or they're at another university that are using Panopto really well, or and they come home and go, "Oh, Dad, but you're still doing your boring PowerPoint," because everyone's moved on to Prezi. It's just these are real examples of very readers and professors coming to me at places I've previously worked and saying, "I really need to use this," and I say, "Why?" And but it's because my daughter's using this in her university, in Nottingham or wherever. So there's lots of influences from both peers, friends and family, other people within in addition to just the kind of Twitter chat. So but at the same time, I think there eventually there is some impact of that, and institutions need to kind of allow staff to take those risks.
Okay. Yeah, that's that last point is very interesting. I always feel like sometimes universities aren't the best place to take these risks, or people are kind of a bit worried about them. But anyway, that's another issue. Do you have what a last couple, I mean last thoughts really? If people are interested in this, especially the Twitter chats or talks, would there be any advice you'd want to put out there in terms of anybody who's thinking of doing it themselves? Any top tips from yourself about what to do,
Intense,
or
yeah.
what to do, or what not to do?
Well, be very careful of walking and tweeting, and that's a health warning there, in terms of
Yes.
talks and Twitter walks. But I would start with tweet chats, and if you don't want to be on Twitter as yourself, then create an alias, and just follow different tweet chats that you're interested in, especially the learning and teaching and higher education one. You don't need to be a participant. You can be what's described as a learning lurker. You can actually just you can that you can just you can learn a lot just from reading the Twitter chat itself. But
Yes.
also, if you don't want to be yourself there, and you don't want to be seen to be giving the opinions on various learning and teaching things, then you can just be an avatar, and give yourself a name, and sort of start from there really. And then as you get more comfortable, then the Twitter walk is probably the next thing to do. But that would have to be, we've done ones at City where I previously worked, around the idea of learning spaces. So they're a bit more niche than the Twitter chat, which can be on any topic.
Okay, lovely. Thank you. That's all my questions, actually. Thank you for taking
Okay.
time out, and hopefully we'll catch up at a later date.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
All right,
Thanks a
cheers,
lot.
mate.
Cheers.